World Ain't Ready, a Les Mis fanfic written by Idiopathic Smile and read by Full Day's Drive. Chapter 15. Grantaire's never been one of those people who can remember their dreams, which is probably for the best, because when he wakes up in the dark covered in sweat, heart slamming against his ribs, there's no nightmare storyline to unlearn, just a vast, crushing sense of unease. A hazy certainty something bad is about to happen. Then he looks down at the unfamiliar blankets clutched in his fists, and he remembers that it's okay. No need to panic. The something very bad already happened. If only his nerves would get with the program. If only he could have a chat with the chemicals spiking through his bloodstream, reason with the part of his brain that is suddenly wide awake, ready to crouch in a corner and defend him from enemies. It's still dark out, but falling asleep again feels unlikely. He stares up at Angelos's ceiling, trying to convince himself to keep his eyes off the clock, since it's not like having that knowledge will help. If anything, it'll be worse. Cold evidence of just how burned out he's going to be for the rest of the day. Grantaire does everything he can think of to keep from looking. He tries to count to 100, but he gives up at 11 because numbers are boring. He runs through the lyrics to his favorite song, front to back. He replays the mental image of 12-year-old Angelos getting mistaken for a cowgirl. He replays Eponine's delighted smile at the Scooby-Doo jokes. He doesn't replay the memory of Angelos sleepily burrowing into Grantaire's shirt. It's all a stopgap measure, though. Grantaire's impulse control is awful when he's tired. He rolls onto his stomach, props himself onto his elbows, and peers right at the only light source in the room. 4:49. He drops back down. Shit, Grantaire mumbles, muffled into his pillow so he doesn't have to worry about waking. What? Says Angelos. Grantaire cracks one eye open to peer over at him. Oh, crap, dude, sorry, I was trying to be quiet. It's fine. Angelos is sitting up in bed. There's a book in his hands, but it's not open. You didn't wake me up or anything. You okay? Says Grantaire. Angelos sighs. Relatively speaking, I don't think I have the right to complain about anything in my life. Maybe ever again. That's a lot to deal with, Grantaire agrees. He rolls on to his side. She kinda played the ultimate bad news trump card. Other than maybe, you're the only one who can see me because I've been dead all along, but if I'd just known sooner, says Angelos, or if my parents had known sooner, they could have gotten her and Gavroche out of there before the fire. Months ago. He turns to look at Grantaire. By the eerie glow of the alarm clock, his face is an impressionist painting in blue. I start the student group because I want things to be better, and what happens? My friends get attacked, and it turns out a girl I eat lunch with every day was going through things I can't imagine. Well, I was just consumed with stuff that, in the grand scheme of things, must be almost inconsequential. You worry about, like, the state of the world, though, says Grantaire. Clean water. World peace. That's not exactly... I worry about other stuff, too, Angelos cuts in. Selfish stuff. And maybe if I'd been able to see beyond all of that, I could've...
Wow, man.
Grantaire props his head up on his arm for a better vantage point.
Now there's some thinking that feels, I don't know, a little unproductive.
Angelos sighs again and lowers himself onto his back, lets his head hit the pillow with what would be a thunk if it wasn't, you know, a pillow. He digs his palms into his eyes.
Was that something I told you? He says. Are you quoting me right now?
Grantaire frowns.
Seriously, are you okay, or...
I have no right not to be, says Angelos to the ceiling.
See, that's not how okay works, Grantaire says. And when Angelos rolls to face him, Grantaire realizes for the first time how close they're lying. Curved toward each other like a closed set of parentheses.
There's maybe 2 feet of space between the twin beds, but on a queen mattress, they would be in the same bed right now. Granted, it's an important 2 feet of space, but... Grantaire's lost the thread. He finds it again when Angela says,
"What do you mean?"
in a small voice, so unlike himself that Grantaire wishes suddenly there was someone else in the room, so there could be a reason to reach out and touch Angelos's arm, brush the hair off his forehead, even just set a hand on his knee. Some point of contact, something solid. Nothing feels real in this light. There's no, like... Grantaire stumbles for words that can do the reaching for him. It's tough when his every thought feels like it's being sifted through a thick wad of cotton. It's not some fucked up arcade game where you have to earn, like, sadness tokens and then at the end you get to cash them in for sadness prizes. Like, the fucking privilege of feeling really shitty. You can just be sad. It's okay. Don't start feeling bad about feeling bad. You've got way too much shit to do to waste your time on that. Curled up under layers of blankets, Angelos is not his usual towering presence. He frowns. Grantaire tucks his free hand under his head, like he can conquer the urge to touch if he only contorts his body a little more. "Besides," he says, "I don't think you get how much you helped."
"Please, I just babysat and slept on you," Angelos protests.
"None of the good shit tonight would have happened without you," says Grantaire. "If all it cost me was an hour of my time and a little drool on my shoulder, what is it?"
"Oh God, did I drool?"
Angelos says.
"I'm so sorry, God, about all of that."
He sounds almost solemn, and this is the opposite of what Grantaire wanted. Grantaire's not sure where he's screwing up. Every cog in his head is turning at half speed, and it still feels like this conversation shouldn't be so freaking difficult. "Who cares?" he says. "It was your jacket."
"No, I mean..."
"You were asleep," says Grantaire. "I wasn't gonna, like, shove you off the couch."
"Not like you could've, in front of my mom,"
says Angelos bleakly. It's like arguing with a wall. A bummed-out wall with an annoying martyr complex.
"Give it a rest, man," says Grantaire.
"Honestly, I would've done the same thing if she hadn't been there, so..."
"Would you?"
says Angelos in the darkness. And Grantaire freezes. His pulse is beating in his fingertips. He wishes Angelos had spoken a little louder. It's hard to read someone's tone in a near whisper.
"See?" Angelos says. "It was weird of me to..."
"What, dude?" Grantaire is just too tired to lay here letting him be wrong about stuff. "Sleep? Have feelings? Anybody would be worn out from all the shit we put you through tonight. And cuddling is not actually, like, some huge hardship." Angelos is opening his mouth to say something else wrong, and Grantaire barrels on. "Hey, remember earlier tonight when I fucking cried on you? Not better. Not less embarrassing. And you were great about it. You didn't give me shit at all. So if that's...
Because when someone's that upset, holding them is literally easier than not doing it,"
says Angelos, like it's obvious. Which it is. "Yes," says Grantaire. "That is my point." Angelos stares up at the ceiling, crossing his arms thoughtfully.
"Oh."
It's hard not to bask a little, because Grantaire's pretty sure he just flat-out won the argument. It's also hard to bask too much, because, on second thought, Grantaire can't totally remember how this fight started, or the larger point he was trying to make.
"So if..."
Angelos starts, trailing off uncharacteristically.
"What?"
Angelos hasn't looked away from his ceiling. He shakes his head.
"Never mind."
"Will you accept that you're allowed to be sad?" Grantaire presses.
"I can't even wrap my head around it,"
says Angelos.
"The Thénardiers and all that. It's just so awful."
"Believe me, I know what you mean," Grantaire says.
"And there's no...
It's like... The blankets rustle, and Angelos rolls over again to his back.
Did you know there's enough food on the planet?
For everyone, I mean.
Like, we talk about world hunger and food shortages, but if you look at the amount of crops we produce worldwide and you add it up, it's enough. If you could wave a magic wand and move all the food around, if you could get everyone to agree it was our top priority, and we put everything else aside, we could feed everyone tomorrow. Every single person who's dying of malnutrition, or who's going to die, they don't have to. It's not just wrong that people starve. It's completely senseless.
Grantaire doesn't point out that the magic wand thing is probably a more realistic plan than asking people to put aside their petty greed and bullshit. Angelos is hurting, and he's also right. And so Grantaire says,
uh-huh. And it's almost the same thing with Eponine and Gavroche.
Angelos is crossing his arms again, and Grantaire looks around the room for an extra blanket or something, but in the dim light, everything at the edges is just shadows.
I just keep thinking about gay couples or lesbian couples. Couples where somebody's trans or bi or anything else where they can be barred from adopting, for no other reason. Or people who can't afford to have kids, or people who have health problems or can't get pregnant or whatever.
He swallows.
There's so many people who want kids, who would have been so good to Eponine and Gavroche, and would have kept them safe, and just been good parents, done everything right. And instead, those kids get...
Angelos makes a sharp gesture with one hand.
All of that, and it's not... I know this makes me sound like a spoiled child, but it's not fair. It's profoundly not fair.
It's not, Grantaire agrees.
And it's senseless, says Angelos. It happens for no reason, because there's enough, like, there's enough love in the world for everyone. But it's the same as with the food supply. It's a problem of distribution.
Yeah. Grantaire's voice is hoarse.
But there's no way to fix it. Even in my head. I mean, legalize adoption for all orientations, reform the foster system, but none of that would have helped Eponine and Gavroche.
Angelos sighs.
There's no solution. So many people want kids and can't have them, but then when there are kids, they get wasted on people like Mr. and Mrs. Thénardier.
Well, you can't make people love each other, says Grantaire. Even if it would solve a lot of problems, that's not...
I know, Angelos says. Believe me, I get that. It's just...
senseless. Yeah, it is. Grantaire twists around to check the time. The clock shines its unforgiving numbers back to him with the cold certainty of an evil robot.
I don't want to know, do I?
Nope. Grantaire flops back down. We're gonna be zombies tomorrow. Unless you can pull, like, a 2-hour nap right at this moment.
Not likely, says Angelos. I haven't slept since.
He drops off, but he doesn't need to, because it's not like Grantaire has forgotten the pleasant weight of his body on the couch.
If it would help you sleep, Grantaire starts. Yeah?
Nothing.
It's too strange to say out loud, to suggest even in this hazy in-between space between the sleeping world and the waking one.
Tell me, says Angelos, rolling over and putting them face to face, like that's supposed to make it easier for them to talk and not 1,000% harder.
Seems like you managed okay with the human pillow, he ventures.
And okay, fair, that was also before we ate most of a pint of ice cream, but if, I don't know, if it would be useful, you don't have to if you don't want to, but...
Are you sure it won't be weird? Says Angelos.
It's only weird if you make it weird, Grantaire says. The blankets rustle as Angelos inches backwards, towards the wall, moving away, Grantaire assumes, until Angelos looks back up at him, and Grantaire realizes that he was actually moving to make room, on the bed, for them to share. Because Angelos is freaking out, and Grantaire is the only person around, and Angelos has trusted him with this. Cuddling. Grantaire watches him across the 2-foot gap. Angelos isn't a coward, doesn't backtrack or make it into a joke, doesn't drop his gaze. Very deliberately, he lifts one corner of the comforter and holds it out. Grantaire can't think of a word to say, but he doesn't have to. That's not what Angelos is asking. He doesn't have to do anything but move forward and try not to make it weird. Grantaire's legs tangle in the sheets as he kicks them off, but Angelos doesn't falter. And then Grantaire is climbing out of bed and crossing the space between the 2 twin beds, and then he's easing under the comforter, gingerly to allow Angelos something like personal space, but it's so warm with all the surplus body heat that Grantaire wants to fall asleep right there. That, or, like, start crying again. It feels so good.
You're gonna fall off the edge, says Angelos.
No, I won't, Grantaire insists, but making the argument uses enough of his focus that he starts to wobble backward. Angelos pulls him in with one arm, and after some uncoordinated flopping around, Grantaire winds up on his side, tucked under Angelos's chin. It's not so different, really, from that hug in the hallway, Grantaire tells himself, as he drapes his own arm over Angelos. It's the same thing except sideways and under blankets, and nobody's crying this time, which is better.
See? Not gonna fall, says Grantaire.
I'm happy for you, Angelos says, somewhere between dry and exhausted. Then,
are you sure it's not weird?
The sheets are clean and the bed is soft, and he's lying in Angelos' arms. Grantaire closes his eyes.
Provisional pass, he mumbles.
Angelos smells citrusy, and his side moves with his breathing, and his heart is beating just this side of too fast. His arm around Grantaire is very light and very still. He's never gonna fall asleep like this, Grantaire thinks, rolling his eyes without bothering to open them. It's no surprise that Angelos would be terrible at relaxing. It's no surprise that Angelos would be this upset about needing a hug.
Seriously, says Grantaire into Angelos' chest. It's fine. It's like a human need. More than that, even.
What? Angelos asks, still holding himself so carefully, it's ridiculous.
People need, like, they did the study with baby monkeys, Grantaire explains. They separated them from their moms, and then they made fake moms out of...
The monkeys did?
No,
says Grantaire patiently, although he's so comfortable and his head is so heavy that every syllable has to be pulled out separately.
The scientists, they made fake moms for the monkeys. They'd make one that was basically like a food dispenser with arms and legs, and then one that was made of, like, towel material.
Why? Says Angelos.
I'm getting there. So what they found was, the monkeys didn't give a shit about wire food mom. All they wanted to do was hug soft towel mom, and they would just, like, try to get her attention. But they couldn't because, you know, she was towels. But they'd keep trying, and...
Angelos's arm tightens around Grantaire, involuntary.
Oh my god, says Angelos. Why would anybody do that to monkeys?
Grantaire frowns.
It was an experiment.
No, says Angelos.
They didn't need to torture a bunch of innocent monkeys to prove something that fucking obvious. It's such a stupid... When was this?
Like, the 50s, I think? Back when doing science just meant you could put on a white coat and, like, be a dick to animals.
They didn't need to do that, Angelos says again.
His hold on Grantaire's waist has eased up somewhat, but it's still on the clutching side. Grantaire's face is squashed into his chest, just like old times. In about 4 seconds, the heat of Grantaire's breathing reflected back at him is gonna be oppressively hot, but now he just enjoys it. Angelos being defensive of baby animals just brings everything to another level.
Hey,
says Grantaire.
Hey, Angelos.
Yeah? Let's go rescue them. Grantaire tries to pull away far enough to look up into Anjelos' face, but when he peers up, Anjelos is struggling to keep his eyes open. The monkeys, Grantaire adds, by way of clarification. From the 50s? Anjelos' words slur just a little. Time travel, says Grantaire dismissively. We'll go back, we'll break into the lab, scoop up every last one of them. No, says Anjelos. Where would we put them? It's almost too easy. In your ranch, Grantaire tells him. What? The one in Wyoming. Can't look after both, Anjelos mumbles. Cows and monkeys, it's too different, like, skill sets. Fine, Grantaire says. You can herd cows and I'll watch all the monkeys. And cuddle them. He gives Anjelos a little squeeze, to demonstrate or something. Man, I'm gonna be so lazy with it, though. You'll come in after a long day of, wrangling cattle, and I'll be watching TV and eating bonbons. I'll have only cuddled, like, half the monkeys. It's gonna be a disaster. Mm-hmm. You're not really listening, are you? Says Grantaire. You're not even hearing my amazing plan. Only then does he remember that getting Anjelos to sleep was the whole point in the first place, so he can't really be annoyed it's working. Holy shit, it's working. I'm a genius, murmurs Grantaire. Mm-hmm, says Anjelos, already more or less dead to the world. Grantaire knows on some level that being all entwined together in a bed is gonna have some drawbacks, that if he was thinking clearly, he would probably be freaking out about this. But Grantaire's putting off so many other things till tomorrow, he figures he can add one more to the pile. He drifts off trying to think of some good monkey names. Grantaire wakes up with sunlight sifting straight into his face. He lies very still for as long as he can, eyes screwed shut like he's hoping the sun will blink first. And it's only when he notices the feel of unfamiliar sheets that he starts to piece together last night's series of events. And why, what the freaking hell? He's in Anjelos' bed. That nugget of information is enough to make him open his eyes, but it only confirms what he'd already started to suspect from the absence of snoring and the lack of any knees or elbows digging into him. He is the sole occupant. Grantaire fell asleep cuddling with Anjelos and woke up alone. He can't shake the feeling that whatever happened is his own fault. What are the odds Grantaire's unconscious body attempted to sleep-grope him, or sleep-hump him, or sleep-kiss him tenderly on the forehead? What are the odds that Grantaire's unconscious body revealed the whole agonized mess of feelings via some kind of elaborate sleep pantomime? And Anjelos had to escape to the living room couch. He rolls over and buries his face into the pillow. Okay, that is a crazy thing to worry about, Grantaire tells the stuffing. Like, maybe actually crazy. Get a hold of yourself, pal. The part of his brain that never, ever stops noticing this kind of thing, not for any reason, reports that it doesn't smell significantly like Anjelos. Which is fair, really, since the smell Grantaire associates with him is deodorant, and most people don't go around wiping their armpits on pillowcases. Eponine had said something about Anjelos' sheets, that they had a lot of threads in them, or... Holy shit, Eponine and Gavroche! Grantaire needs to make sure they're still okay. He's bolting out of bed before he's given much thought to the fact he has no plan on how to help. Or what in the world he's gonna say. Only that he should be downstairs and... Why is his shirt so loose and so soft? Oh, right. Grantaire pinches the bridge of his nose and takes a few deep breaths. It's gonna be fine, he mutters, although it's not convincing from this angle. At the very least, it's gonna be less bad than getting his head knocked into a drinking fountain. Less bad than his best friend realizing she doesn't have a house anymore. Everything is relative, Also, he's really, really hungry. Maybe Grantaire can slip out and grab them some McDonald's or something. When he reaches into his jean pocket, his car keys are still there. He hopes they didn't jab Angelos in the leg or anything. Of course, that is literally the least horrifying possibility his brain can even construct, but it doesn't change the fact that Grantaire needs to go downstairs. He can't spend the entire rest of his life barefoot in the middle of Angelos' room. Angelos' parents seem pretty understanding, but there are limits. He really should have taken those pajama pants when they were offered, he thinks, padding down the stairs. His jeans are too loose from sleeping in, grubby on the inside. The hems drag on the carpet, and he keeps stepping on them. In proper sunlight, the hallway looks even more ridiculously wholesome, from the artsy framed photos of clay pots to the overflowing tangle of shoes by the door. The smell is what puts the whole thing over the top, though. Garlic and onions, shimmery and golden, and somehow managing to make him more hungry. He sniffs the air, trying to find the source, trying to remember if he's ever heard of dinner-scented Febreze, before he realizes it gets more noticeable the closer he stands to the kitchen. Cooking. In retrospect, this did not require, like, stellar detective work. Jinkies, Grantaire mutters, as he shuffles through the door. What? Says Enjolras from the stove. And Grantaire has about a quarter of a heart attack, although, of course, it's Enjolras' house, and he's free to hang out soundlessly in whatever rooms he pleases. Also, maybe Enjolras wasn't being totally silent. Maybe the hiss of frying onions was noticeable from halfway down the hall, and Grantaire just failed to put this together because he didn't know how onions sound. And also, he still feels raw and bruised behind the eyes from sleeplessness. Have you seen Eponine? Says Grantaire. His voice comes out like a rusty hinge. Enjolras sets down the spatula and turns around. The glasses are nowhere to be seen, but there's a focus to his gaze that suggests he's put his contacts in for the morning. He's fully dressed in normal, clean clothes, socks even. Behind him, the onions are crackling merrily away. Grantaire feels like the world's sloppiest, most incompetent burglar. Good morning, he amends. Have you seen Eponine? Morning, says Enjolras. The line of his mouth thins. She and my dad went to the bank, to see if her parents thought to clean out her account yet. Fucking hell, says Grantaire. Enjolras nods. Basically. Do you want to sit down, or... One more dot in the massive, pointillist mural of the Thénardier's crimes. If Enjolras' parents can bring them to justice, Grantaire may have to give them a medal. Mail it to them anonymously. The shitty thing is, swirling around with all of the sick, incredulous outrage, there's a small patch of relief that he and Enjolras are apparently still on okay terms. Maybe Grantaire didn't sleep grope him at all. Maybe Enjolras woke up and got out of bed for the reasons most people wake up and get out of bed, and Grantaire can look him in the eye without it being a whole thing. There's an island with two tall, swivelly chairs. Grantaire takes one, and finds himself with a front-row seat and watching Enjolras stir onions around a pan. What are you doing? Grantaire asks. My dad was going to take us out to eat, but then the bank account thing came up, so I figured I'd attempt the one thing I'm capable of. Don't say that. You've already done so much, Grantaire interjects. Enjolras looks up from his skillet to give Grantaire a weird look. I meant it's the only dish I can cook, he says. Unless you count, you know, grilled cheese or cinnamon toast, which seems like cheating. Nah, you can count it. Grantaire fidgets on the chair. Last time I used a toaster, there were billowing clouds of black smoke. A minor grease fire. Light property damage. Setbacks. He rocks the chair back and forth some more. He doesn't want to doubt Enjolras' judgment, And the kitchen does smell delicious, but...
Dude, onions for breakfast?
Angelos wipes his forehead.
Frittata, he says.
And then, maybe realizing this is less than illuminating.
It's a giant thick omelet where you finish cooking it in the oven.
Now that he said it, Grantaire takes in the egg carton on the counter next to the stove, a cutting board full of various chopped vegetables.
Anything you don't eat? Pennies? Says Grantaire.
Angelos takes a breath, and Grantaire adds,
No, I was being serious. I'll eat pretty much anything. I mean, I'm not wild about cantaloupe, but...
A corner of Angelos' mouth quirks up.
Nobody is wild about cantaloupe, he says. Hey, does Corphyrox still need a band name? It beats the thing about herpes,
Angelos concedes.
Okay, so I will try to leave out cantaloupe. Anything Eponine or Gavroche don't like?
The swivel chair was a bad call. Grantaire can't stay still, and the chair telegraphs his restless nerves for the world to see. For the kitchen. Whatever.
Nothing I know of, he says. Honestly, Gavroche might eat pennies. Where is that kid anyway?
Sleeping, says Angelos, dumping handfuls of cherry tomatoes into the pan. Barring a rush of cold water to the face, he'll probably remain that way. Grantaire has to smile at that.
Indestructible.
Angelos' stirring becomes more a series of jabs.
Luckily, he says.
Grantaire twists back and forth in the chair. He wonders how messed up it would sound to say, like, Hey, after our fake relationship ends, could I call you sometimes and ask you to be mad about stuff I'm mad about? The thing is, Angelos is a good enough person that he might do it. Angelos' voice in his ear late at night, sleepy and righteous, and Grantaire needs to pull himself back together.
I'd offer to help with the cooking, he says instead, but, oh my god, that would be great, says Angelos with feeling. Dude.
Grantaire scratches the back of his neck and wonders for the first time what his hair is doing.
The rest of that sentence was gonna be like, Anytime I try to make food, a trail of wreckage follows. There'd be tears and fire and screaming. Can you break eggs into a bowl and whisk them?
Angelos says.
I genuinely don't know.
When Angelos' dad and Eponine return, the first thing she does is stop in her tracks and peer into the oven and then back at Grantaire.
Did you cook something? She says.
You? Grantaire and Angelos look up from his mom's laptop. Last night's Daily Show paused mid-joke, Jon Stewart's face frozen in cartoony outrage.
He did, says Angelos. Co-cooked, Grantaire corrects. If that. I just crushed some eggs into a bowl and fished out most of the shell pieces. Angelos did all the real work.
Ugh, says Eponine. She fills up a glass of water at the sink, adds some ice from the freezer. I'm gonna go wake up my brother. Try to be less gross when I get back. It's hard to stay annoyed at her, though. It turns out Angelos' dad elected to go ahead and also drive her to Grantaire's house to pick up her shit. But she still thought to grab Grantaire a change of clothes. Granted, this includes a t-shirt Grantaire never wears, because it's not black or gray, but it means clean boxers and jeans, which are a minor miracle. Breakfast is weird for how normal it all feels compared to yesterday, sitting around the kitchen table in daylight hours. The egg thing turned out well. Predictably, Gavroche eats 3 helpings, doused in ketchup and hot sauce, because his taste buds are as indestructible as his spirit. There's a moment where Angelos' dad asks if anyone wants milk, and Eponine starts kicking Grantaire under the table. But other than that, they could be any dude and his best friend sharing a meal at his boyfriend's house during what's technically school hours. No big deal. Angelos' dad keeps complimenting the food in more and more elaborate ways, which at first seems nice, and then over the top. And then gradually, Grantaire realizes it's mostly about embarrassing Enjolras in front of the supposed boyfriend. Enjolras plays the part well, slumping in his chair like he wants to die. His dad also insists on giving Enjolras a big hug before they head off for school, but this doesn't really seem to embarrass him at all. The temptation to be just slightly truant proves too great, and they make a stop on the way for coffee. Or, in Enjolras' case, cider. "I'll pay," Grantaire says. On some level, he likes the symmetry of it. Their first full day of fake dating, and the last, bracketed by an overpriced cup of too hot apple juice. Enjolras doesn't put any effort into protesting, even a few minutes later when Grantaire reaches back to hand him a very full cardboard cup. Enjolras just sits there in the back of the van, sleepily blowing steam away from the lid, and Grantaire drives, trying not to watch him in the rearview mirror. Still, the coffee does not do its job. Grantaire's awareness drifts in and out of focus for the rest of the school day, like his brain is a radio and someone else is working the dial. At lunch, there's some kind of disagreement at the table, the gist of which is that nobody bothered to make dinner reservations for Saturday, which means they're out of luck as far as their town's two nice restaurants are concerned, and that it's unclear whose fault this is. The sound of his friends passionately disagreeing about something is so soothing that Grantaire nearly faceplants into a sandwich, and is saved only by Musichetta on his left yanking him back by his shirt collar.
"Catch your own goddamn boyfriend," she grumbles at Enjolras,
more or less propping Grantaire against him. Grantaire thinks of Enjolras pulling him back from the edge of the bed, but he did fine last night. It's not a smart thing to say with this group of people, and the conversation flows on. He stays leaning because it is easier than sitting up again, and after a while, Enjolras tips his head to the side so that it's resting against Grantaire's. Given that Enjolras is also tired enough to nod off, they have zero structural integrity this way, thinks Grantaire. This is not a good plan. And then he doesn't move.
"Did you remember to leave something in your car this time?" Jeanne asks, as they watch the clock for the final minute of class. A countdown to the last walk to save the Planet Club. If Grantaire's honest with himself, he's even gonna miss that, third wheeling with Corf and Jeanne twice a week. All the same, he needs to start preparing for the future.
"Yeah, wouldn't you know it," Grantaire says. "Totally forgot my pencil."
Jeanne looks down at the pencil already in Grantaire's hand.
"My backup pencil. Which clearly I need if I'm going to be that careless with my stuff."
In response, Jeanne just rolls his eyes, and Grantaire pats him on the shoulder. Jeanne's sweater is dotted with pom-poms, and the pom-poms have little googly eyes glued to them.
"If you did a really fast cartwheel, could you make your shirt roll its eyes too?" says Grantaire. "That's the best reason I've ever heard to learn cartwheels, grant you that," says Jeanne. "I could teach you," Grantaire offers.
Jeanne doesn't look away from the clock. Freedom is so close.
"This summer," he says, "you're gonna teach me cartwheels and I'm gonna grow tomatoes."
It's a tossed-off comment, like there's no question they'll hang out, and Grantaire realizes that the end of his sham relationship with Enjolras likely won't mean the end of talking to Jeanne, who will probably still be there on Monday, recommending poems and playing Screw, Marry, Kill to win. He's not sure if this would be overwhelming on a full night's sleep, but as it is, he's touched. He's also still an asshole, and 10 seconds before the bell, he can't resist the urge to twirl the pencil in his hands and add,
"Have fun whispering sweet nothings with your gentleman friend." "Oh my god," says Jeanne. "This isn't even the pot calling the kettle black. This is the pot calling the kettle a pot. Are you guys gonna get married right after graduation? Be one of those high school sweethearts couples?"
5 seconds now. They watch the longest hand twitch back up to 12. To 0.
"I don't think you need to worry much about that," says Grantaire.
Skipping the stop at Jeon's locker, the trip from World Myth to Ms. Hooshaloop's does not exactly pass Mr. Muriel's office, but it doesn't not pass it either. Grantaire isn't intending to go inside or anything. He's only got a few minutes before the meeting. And anyway, there's no need. Jolie hasn't bugged Grantaire about therapy since that one time in the library. It's not a visit, it's a drive-by. Barrel made the dude sound so mysterious. Who can blame Grantaire for wanting a glimpse of the tortoise in the wild? Or the tortoise's closed door. Because, as it turns out, the school counselor's office has no windows. Privacy. It makes sense. If Grantaire was having an emotional breakdown, he wouldn't want a bunch of rubberneckers either. What keeps him standing there, though, is not the absence of a window, but how the whole door is almost papered over with comic strips, chiefly Calvin and Hobbes. Grantaire hasn't read the newspaper funnies in years because he's not a child or an old person, but he doesn't remember the pictures being so well done. A year of trying to capture the ABC on paper has him wildly jealous of Calvin's faces. They're so simple but so good. It's like a magic trick. He peers closer, trying to understand.
"Can I help you?" says a voice behind him.
Grantaire turns reluctantly, feeling ambushed, but of course there's no law saying a school counselor can never step out of their office. Mr. Muriel doesn't have a class to supervise. He's not a prisoner.
"Oh," says Grantaire. I wasn't creeping outside your room or anything. I was just..."
"An art appreciator," says Mr. Muriel, smiling.
The smile doesn't look particularly tortoise-like. Reptiles aren't too good with that human warmth stuff. Grantaire makes a vague move with his head that splits the difference between a nod and a shrug. Mostly what he wants is for Mr. Muriel to leave, so he can get another good look at the comics.
"You're Grantaire, right?"
Mr. Muriel says. Grantaire frowns.
"How did?"
Although, come to think of it,
the black eye's pretty distinctive, huh?
He rocks back onto his heels, and Mr. Muriel flashes him a look that is, like, Fontaine levels of sympathy. He wonders if it's something they practice in shrink school.
"Did you want to step inside for a minute?"
Mr. Muriel waves a hand behind himself, at the still swarming hallway.
"All that background noise is hard on an old man's hearing."
The meeting looms, and Grantaire shouldn't be taking up this poor guy's time. On the other hand...
"Do you have candy?"
Mr. Muriel scoffs.
"You think I'm new to this? Starbursts and Jolly Ranchers."
Privately, Grantaire admits he probably would have caved for, like, old Pez. He steps aside to let Mr. Muriel unlock the door of his own office, and shuffles in after him. Grantaire knows enough not to be surprised that there's no therapist couch like in the movies, but the room is shockingly, hilariously small. All the travel posters in the world can't change how much it feels like climbing into somebody's locker.
"Nice to see the school takes our issues so seriously,"
Grantaire mutters, folding himself into a chair. Mr. Muriel shrugs.
"I have simple needs, and given that I'm 5'5", asking for more space felt greedy."
Even so, it seems to take some effort for him to navigate the narrow gap between the wall and the side of his desk.
"So, do you want to talk about it? Being short? Yeah, do you ever have to, like, climb onto your kitchen counter to reach the stuff in the cabinets?"
Maybe that's part of the reason Grantaire hasn't learned how to cook. Your knees get tired, clambering up there any time you need a glass.
"I'd recommend a step stool," says Mr. Muriel.
He takes the other chair, settles into it.
"You know,"
he says,
"I'd been hoping you'd meet with me at some point, Grantaire."
And just like that, the room goes from tiny to suffocating. Grantaire's hands tighten on his backpack. When is it okay to just ask for his candy and scram?
He
stammers.
I'm not here to talk. You don't need to... I don't have, like, problems.
2.5 months of lying every day, but in retrospect, this is still probably the biggest lie he's ever told. From the way Mr. Muriel blinks at him, Grantaire's got the sense it's not successful.
"In that case, you are a very, very lucky person,"
says Mr. Muriel mildly.
"No, okay, obviously I have problems, but it's not stuff you can do anything about. I don't have...
mental health stuff. Depression, or etc.
Therapy problems. Therapy problems."
Mr. Muriel repeats it blankly, which doesn't seem fair. Of all the people in the school, it seems like he should get what it means. Grantaire sighs.
"Like, I don't hear voices. I've never tried to kill myself. I don't have an eating disorder. I'm not, you know, crazy?"
Mr. Muriel says nothing, busy rearranging the paperweights on his tiny desk. Grantaire thinks of Jolie sitting in this plastic chair, confiding all his weird head business.
"No offense to mentally ill people," Grantaire adds. "I don't have a problem with..."
It sounds like how some of the guys in his class talk about gay dudes. "Hey, doesn't bother me. As long as they stay far away."
I'm not..."
There's no way to dig himself out of this hole, which, come to think of it, is kind of the nature of holes and digging.
"Okay,"
says Mr. Muriel.
"Okay?"
Mr. Muriel looks up from the paperweights.
"If you don't think working with me is the right move at the moment, that's up to you."
"Thanks," Grantaire says, standing up because he's got a meeting to be late to, and there is no reason to stay. He shoves aside the tireless, contrary part of himself that maybe wanted to fight about it, that wanted Mr. Muriel not to give up, to keep making the case. He scoops up his backpack.
"Some starbursts for the road?"
Mr. Muriel holds out a bowl, and Grantaire eyes the brightly wrapped squares of high fructose corn syrup. At least this conversation wasn't completely in vain, he thinks, grabbing a huge fistful, like the world's rudest trick-or-treater.
"One thing,"
Muriel says, quiet, and Grantaire glances guiltily from his haul, back to Muriel's pale, watery eyes. Grantaire steps away from the door. Late as he is, he can be a little later.
"Yeah?"
He dumps the candy into a pocket of his backpack.
"You know how sometimes you go to the doctor even when it's not cancer?"
"Yeah?"
"Or how people take medicine for a minor cold so it doesn't get worse? Or how you don't say someone is weak for getting the flu?"
Grantaire nods.
"I've never understood why we hold our brains to such a different standard than our bodies,"
says Mr. Muriel.
"That's all."
It's totally different," says Grantaire. "Nobody gets sick because they have, like, a selfish kidney or lungs that take everything too personally, or blood that never learns when to stop getting its hopes up."
"Cells and chemicals," Mr. Muriel says. "They either help us or they don't. Nobody really understands how the brain works anyway, so I figure, why not treat the cold, so to speak? What's the risk? That we feel too okay?"
Grantaire is getting the weirdest flash of déjà vu, although he can't think of why. He ventures.
"The risk is I'd totally waste your time? Do you think there's a chance it would help to talk to someone about the bullying?"
The funny thing is, the bullying isn't even the hardest part of his life right now. It's not second hardest, either. Bronze medal at best, he thinks. It is true Grantaire might be under a dash of pressure right now. Come to think of it, he's not sure who he's gonna vent to when it's all over. Eponine's got a world of her own shit to deal with, and although he's not above sad-sacking his way into some just-dumped sympathy from Jeanne or Jolien Bossuet, she's the only person who will ever know how it all really went down. Well, other than Enjolras, but that's one hell of a dead end.
"It's kind of a long story,"
says Grantaire, scrubbing a hand through his hair. He tries to imagine how he'd explain the events of the past 2.5 months to an outsider. Where he'd even start. I met this boy in detention. He was in there for throwing a shoe. Except really, he was in there because he wants to change the world. He laughs, and hopefully it doesn't sound completely deranged, although he's not sure if he's the best judge of that right now.
Kind of a really, really long story?
Again, says Mr. Muriel, this is what the school pays me to do. There's parts of it Gontera's never even told Eponine, because she was there and he didn't need to, or because, in the case of the hickey or playing that song in his van or sharing a bed this morning, he can only imagine how much she'd make fun of him. There is a certain appeal in coming clean to someone, especially to someone who doesn't have Eponine's biases. If he started from the beginning and told the whole saga, Mr. Muriel wouldn't shrug and call Angelos a douchebag. He probably wouldn't call Gontera a loser, either. That's not his vibe. Also, Gontera would love to see someone react to some of this shit. He chews on his lip.
How good are you at keeping secrets?
That depends, says Mr. Muriel. If it affects your immediate safety, or the safety of another person,
Oh no, dude, nothing like that, Gontera says. Definitely not life or death.
Well, in that case, not to toot my own horn, but... Mr. Muriel lifts both hands to mime blowing into an imaginary instrument.
So, is there a day you would be available?
Tuesdays or Thursdays? He swallows. And after this week, I could do Monday or Friday. Mr. Muriel puts down his pen.
I've never heard a teenager sound so unhappy about having their Fridays free. Yeah, well, I'm an exceptional boy.
I don't doubt it, says Mr. Muriel. And Gontera would explain that it was sarcasm. Except, shit, he really does need to get going. Sensing his antsiness, maybe, Mr. Muriel adds,
is Monday after school good?
Yeah, says Gontera.
Monday's good. Look, I kinda have to be at this thing right now. Want me to write you a pass?
Nah, says Gontera.
I've got that covered.
You're late, Courfeyrac chides, when Gontera slips into the room.
What do you have to say for yourself?
Gontera holds up his backpack.
Who wants candy?
The thing about Gontera's final ABC meeting is that most of the group has no idea it's any kind of ending, and can't know, which cuts off any chance of a tearful goodbye speech. The thing about Gontera's final ABC meeting is that, although he wants it to last forever, the actual business conducted at these things is generally pretty dull, and today is not an exception. None of the spots around Eponine were free, so he's taken a seat on the far side of the room, which means he can at the very least get a glimpse of everyone. Maybe as the club gets bigger and people no longer know each other, they should start arranging the chairs in a circle, so they can learn each other's faces, and the group can have that no-one-person-is-in-charge feel that Angelos is always going for. Columbus High's own Knights of the Round Table. Maybe Gontera can suggest it at some point. Not now, when everyone's busy doing whatever they're doing, but he could ask someone to bring it up later. Cosette, maybe. She'll probably be good for some sympathy, too. Although she seems to know Angelos better than him, so her loyalties may lie elsewhere. He and Angelos have never talked about how they're going to orchestrate this fake breakup, what it will even be about. Sloppy of them. They've been trying to put a positive face on their charade for so long, they never bothered to fake the accompanying fault lines. They're running out of time to hammer together some basic outline of what their issues were. Well, something to talk about on their ride home. Their very last ride home. Gontera knows he needs to stop thinking this way. He does. It's just hard. To distract himself, he digs out his non-backup pencil and opens his notebook to a fresh page.
He wants to do a picture of the whole group. Not how they look sitting in the room right now, since a camera could do that better. And also, it would mean drawing a lot of boring chairs and desks. He'll draw them standing in a row instead, he decides, like a class portrait or a superhero lineup. Come to think of it, he likes that better. America's Boldest Crusaders, he writes, in bubble letters at the top of the page. It's a better distraction than he was planning, because it means coming up with powers for everyone, too. Giving Bahrel super strength feels too easy, so Grantaire draws him with the power of music instead. DJ powers, guaranteed to motivate his allies and deeply confuse his enemies. Bossuet is a friend to animals, Grantaire thinks, adding an overlarge bird on his shoulder. Jolie is a no-brainer. Flight. Musichetta can turn people to stone with a single raised eyebrow. Eponine can phase through solid objects without a scratch. Cheyenne hypnotizes the bad guys with poetry. Grantaire draws him holding a copy of Leaves of Grass above his head like Moses with the Ten Commandments. Corfirok is a shapeshifter. Cosette has dominion over plants. Combeferre is psychic. Feuilly can lift objects with his mind. Marius can... well, Grantaire will come back to him later. No, that's mean. Marius can speak any language, which sounds stupid, but it means he can also talk to machines, which is awesome. Molly has the ability to grow 20 feet tall. He doesn't know what to do for her little freshman friends, but he gives one X-ray vision and one super speed, and if they don't like it, that's out of Grantaire's hands. Making Angelos have lightning powers is even more obvious than making Bahrel have punching powers. He bites his lip, thinking. Someone says his name. Grantaire looks up.
What? Do you want to go with us? Says Combeferre. Talking to the superintendent?
Oh, right. Operation make anyone in charge care about homophobia.
Not really? He says.
Are you sure? Says Jeanne. Don't pressure him, says Angelos.
Thanks, baby,
Grantaire says, because for the time being, he can. In the end, he gives in to the simple option and draws Angelos with a flaming sword. When the flames are orange, it cuts through anything. When the flames are blue, it can heal. Not that there's any good way to show this in a pencil drawing. Really, Grantaire needs to trace over all the lines in pen, erase the old stuff, and track down his colored pencils. Except, maybe he could use markers a little too, for some of the bolder colors. We're done, man, says Eponine, kicking his chair. She pulls at the paper.
What have you got?
Angelos is on the other side of the room, talking to Combeferre and Jeanne about something. Grantaire could put up a fight, but the truth is, he's kind of proud of this drawing. It's not perfect, but the poses and the faces are better than what he could have done at the start of the year. He lifts his palm away, and Eponine hums. Man, why do I get the weak power? Give me something cool.
Phasing is awesome, Grantaire protests. You could, like, go anywhere.
Anybody with a lockpick could do that, she says. Ice powers. I want ice powers.
I already have someone who can turn people to stone, though. Does it really add anything to...
Water powers, then, says Eponine. And, like, clouds and shit. It's not terrible. Grantaire nods.
Musichetta giving you a ride?
She shakes her head. Feuilly, since I live with him now...
Oh, right.
Hey, can I come get my dress from you tomorrow morning? She says. Me and Musichetta are getting ready together before we go over to Corfirok's. At Grantaire's no doubt blank face, she adds, at 6? For pictures and Chinese food? That must have been how the restaurant debacle resolved itself. Grantaire feels all right about having missed the thrilling conclusion.
Sure, he says. I mean, not like I'll have somewhere else to be.
He means it as a joke, pretty much, because who really has plans on a Saturday morning? It falls flat, though. He can feel it fall flat. She punches him on the arm. Well, we're hanging out on Sunday. You owe me a blue slushy, and I owe you an ass-kicking at Call of Duty. Probably more than one ass-kicking by now, he says. Their gaming has really fallen by the wayside. Eponine sighs, put upon. Well, I'll just have to do what I can. Look, says Enjolras, as they climb back into the van. About what happened in the meeting? Why? Says Grantaire. What happened? Were you paying attention? Like, at all? I never have before. Grantaire starts up the engine. Why would I start today? He's bracing for a fight, and maybe kind of hoping for one, too, because it's a distinct letdown when Enjolras just sighs and buckles up. He didn't seem mad about Grantaire being late, either. When this is all over, they won't be going back to their old normal, Grantaire provoking, and Enjolras sometimes, thrillingly, failing to rise above it. New normal won't be them fighting. New normal won't be anything. What did I miss? Says Grantaire. At the meeting. There's a pause. Are you giving me, like, an incredulous look right now? He says, backing out of the space. Because I can't see. Because I'm driving. If you didn't care enough to listen before, why are you suddenly interested now? Says Enjolras. Dude, I zone out at everything. I will zone out at my own funeral, says Grantaire. Or, okay, bad example. If I ever get married, I will zone out at my wedding. At the birth of my first child. Definitely next year at graduation. Thankfully, Enjolras talks over him. It was about meeting with the superintendent this afternoon. This afternoon? Grantaire frowns. The last he knew, the ABC couldn't even get a hold of anyone at his office. Combeferre got a call in his cell today right before sixth hour, says Enjolras. It was the superintendent's receptionist, letting us know the only available time slot before the summer was at 4. 4 today, Grantaire repeats. Yeah. Well, that's a ratchet move. Yeah, Enjolras says. So we did some emergency planning, and they're heading over to meet with them now. Combeferre, Jeanne, Courfeyrac, and Molly. Molly? She volunteered. A second later, the other half of it hits him. Not you? Enjolras sighs heavily. I'm worn out. I don't trust myself to stay calm, and if I get upset, that's a liability we don't need. I just... No, says Grantaire. That makes sense. Also, if anyone mentions you're there on behalf of your boyfriend, when we break up, it's the same problem as before. That's true, says Enjolras. Which, actually reminds me, like... Grantaire takes a deep breath. We need to figure out what we're telling people on Monday, why we broke up. Really? We should have planned this way earlier. We've had other things to worry about, Enjolras points out. Which is fair. And, what do you think would be the most convincing? Grantaire's had most of the meeting to reflect on it, but he's still at a loss. Maybe we could say you wanted more time to focus on your studies. No, says Enjolras. Come on. Half my friends already give me grief about focusing on my studies too much. Depressing as this conversation is, Grantaire really wants to know which half. If it's Combeferre, that is a massively hypocritical move. Fine, he says. Your turn. Enjolras flops back against his seat. You realized you liked somebody else. Who? Does it matter? The hell? Says Grantaire. Who leaves their boyfriend for some random person who doesn't even like them back? Fuck it, man. We'll just tell them you weren't ready to get serious. Have you met me? Says Enjolras. We really should have built some problems into this pretend relationship, Grantaire mutters.
Maybe if we acted like you got tired of my bullshit?
Angelos makes an irritated noise. Why does the breakup have to be my fault? Because Grantaire is really relying on his friend's sympathy to get him through this, and that goes out the window if Grantaire is the one who walks out. Because the idea of Grantaire somehow improbably catching hold of Angelos' affections and then throwing it all away is ludicrous.
Fine, says Grantaire. We broke up because I was stealing from you. Because a witch's curse removed my ability to love. Because it turned out I wasn't a person at all, just a swarm of sentient bees in a trench coat.
Can you please? Angelos hisses, and Grantaire cuts him off.
I made the last two serious suggestions anyway, he says. So if you've got something,
we could always... Angelos twists the seatbelt back and forth. We could always just say it's too painful to talk about when people ask. It's simple. It's elegant. It doesn't force their friends to take sides. Nobody's cheating or stealing or bees. He nods, trying it out in his head.
Do you like it? Says Angelos.
This is their last ride home together. It's their last time alone in the van. It's their last time alone ever. Grantaire swallows.
I like it, he says.
When Grantaire gets back home, he doesn't even bother to take his pants off before flopping into bed. He doesn't have anywhere to be until tomorrow night. It feels like he could sleep through his entire senior year if he wasn't careful, which means, he thinks, he should probably go ahead and set an alarm for tomorrow night. His last thought before he nods off is to congratulate himself on having such foresight. He wakes up because Eponine is poking him in the face.
Huh?
He manages.
Your phone's out of battery, she says.
I tried calling you twice, and then I let myself in.
Oh shit, is it prom yet?
Says Grantaire, throwing off the covers. Through the window, the sky is very blue. Saturday morning, she says.
I'm here for my dress?
Yeah. He stretches, watching Eponine gather up her bundle of shiny taffeta. He lost almost a full 24 hours, he realizes, including all of Eponine and Gavroche's first night at their new setup.
Hey, how was it at La Casa de Feuilly?
Loud, says Eponine. I'm sharing a room with a 5-year-old. Her hobbies are yelling and smearing grape jelly on all my shit.
Watch out for ants, dude.
I know, she says. And oh my god, it's so dumb. The parents, they make you, like, tell them before you leave the house. Every single time. Like we're in school or something. Grantaire turns this over in his mind.
So, are you guys gonna stay, or...
Well, yeah, she says, and the duh is implied in the lift of her eyebrows.
And you're okay? Says Grantaire.
Eponine sighs. Yeah. I mean, I keep thinking of things I should have saved from the fire, like waking up in the middle of the night. Damn, why didn't I think to grab that? It would have taken 10 extra seconds to... God... There's so much stuff I could have sold on eBay, she says. Heirlooms and shit. He doesn't really know what to say to that, and Eponine adds, I should get going. Musiquette is waiting outside.
Yeah, he says.
She glances in the direction of the driveway and then back to him. You need help with your tux or anything?
I'm 17, says Grantaire. Why can't you take it on faith that I can dress myself?
Because you've never shown signs of it yet. Why don't you ever wear that shirt? He frowns down at his clothes.
It's too bright.
It's a muted green, she says flatly.
Searing my eyeballs.
Someday I will get you to wear an actual color, says Eponine. Yo, don't forget about Sunday. This 5-year-old demon baby is making me want to shoot something. Like, more than usual.
Won't. He says.
The thought of consuming way too much sugar and losing to Eponine at video games is a life raft, and he's clinging hard.
See you in, like, 7 hours, I guess.
6 and a half, yeah.
She pauses in the door. Hey, are you ready? For what?
Oh, you know, says Eponine. The most magical night of our fucking lives. For all his bravado about being able to dress himself, Grantaire really should have sucked it up and asked for Eponine's help. He's just proud of himself for remembering black socks go with black shoes and black pants. Trying to tie a tie feels like a spatial reasoning problem, and one that he's failing. Grantaire tries tying it in the mirror. He tries taking it off and doing the knot head-on. He even, in a last-ditch effort, tries tying it with his eyes shut, but it is a colossal no-go. The clock is telling him he's got about 5 minutes if he doesn't want to be late for Corfirox, and Grantaire finally gives up and just drapes the thing around his neck. Presumably he knows at least one person who will be better at this shit than him. It's almost impossible to imagine otherwise. He steps back and studies the rest of his reflection. The bruise has faded since Monday, but it's noticeable up close, and it most definitely does not make him look like James Bond. His hair is a mess because his hair is always a mess. It's a property of his hair, and nothing can be done about that, other than maybe hoping it's okay to wear a hat to prom. Thankfully, the suit has done nothing but hang in his closet since his uncle's wedding, so it's not wrinkled or anything. It's weird to put on something he knows he hasn't worn in nearly a year. For one thing, the fact that it still fits him is ironclad evidence that he hasn't gotten even slightly taller. He flops his arms around, trying to get used to the feel of the jacket, which is awfully confining compared to a sweatshirt. Who invented you, tuxedo? He mutters into the mirror. And why? The weird thing is, even though he's the exact same size as before, it feels like the suit hangs better on him. He's not sure why. It's probably not a mystery, just the way he's holding his shoulders. Back at his uncle's wedding, all he'd wanted to do was disappear. A week of not wanting to give people the option of looking away from his black eye has forced him to learn how to stand straighter. Style tip, he tells his reflection. Get the shit beaten out of you, and then get pissed off about it. He's got his keys, his wallet, his phone, and at this point, maybe 30 seconds to make it on time, which means no more excuses to drag his feet, he thinks, heading out through the kitchen.
Grantaire?
Oh, shit. He turns around slowly. His mom must have just gotten in from a run, because she's wearing jogging clothes and her breathing is ragged. She's giving him a confused look. What? He says.
Why are you dressed like that?
Grantaire doesn't even try for sarcasm. His parents have never really gotten his sense of humor.
Prom. Remember, you gave me money for a ticket?
She has to remember this happening, but she won't stop looking at him. It's like she can't get over the surprise of seeing him in a suit of his own free will. He wonders what she thought he was planning to actually use the money for. Hosting a keg party. Starting up a meth lab.
Who are you going with?
She says. Grantaire stares at her, but it doesn't feel pointed. It doesn't feel like she's trying to interrogate him. Just make small talk. Awkward, excruciating small talk. His keys slide out of his hands and land loudly on the counter.
You would know them, he stammers.
She hasn't nodded and walked past him yet. It's so weird.
Your girlfriend? She says.
Who?
The sullen girl with all the eye makeup.
That can only mean one person, but it snags at him to hear someone talk about Eponine that way. He eyes the clock above the oven, and yeah, he is officially late because his mom chose today of all days to inexplicably try for some kind of Hallmark moment.
She's not my girlfriend, he says,
Come on, says his mom knowingly.
She's over here all the time. He can't say quite what it is, but suddenly he's furious.
Actually, he says, if you're curious or something, I'm going with... You met his mom once. Angelos. My boyfriend?
His throat is dry. Even as he watches her face crumple, he can't quite believe he said it out loud, that he can't take it back, that there's nothing left to do but ride out the shockwaves.
Oh, she says. Are you?
Grantaire swallows.
Dating a guy?
Yeah.
How, one hand goes to her face, where it hovers, useless. How long have you known?
He closes his eyes.
A long time. Like, years.
When he opens them again, she's still looking at him.
Oh, sweetie,
she says softly. She takes a step forward, and she's covered in sweat, which means if she hugs him, he'll have to change and it'll make him even later. But he can make it work, he thinks. He'll find a way.
Is that why...
What? He says, blinking hard. His chest aches.
What, Mom? Is that why your grades...
Grantaire freezes. His eyeballs won't work for a long moment, won't focus on anything. He swallows again.
Wow, says Grantaire loudly. Wow! God, why am I surprised?
That's the part that gets him. The way he thought for a moment this could be something else. He's been around way too many chill adults lately.
I only meant...
He's so angry he's shaking.
No, trust me, I get what you meant, he says. I tell you something like that? I come in here with a bruise on my face, but hey, let's talk about my 9th grade GPA. Like, priorities, right?
What? She squints in the unlit kitchen, frowning.
Is that a black eye? It's been there since Monday,
he yells.
Don't use that tone, I haven't seen you in a week,
she says.
What happened to your eye?
No, he says.
No, you know what? I think this all works a lot better when we just don't talk to each other. We had a system, and it was going great, so let's just forget this happened and...
He crosses the kitchen, adrenaline sour in his bloodstream.
Do you?
She starts. When he turns around, she's still standing in the middle of the tile floor, sweating from her run. It must be windy out, because her hair is sticking up in every direction.
Do you want me to get your tie for you?
No thanks, says Grantaire.
I've kind of learned to rely on other people.
He's reached the door. He whisks it open. Slamming doors is childish and cliched, but he's looking forward to the sound, to shaking the frames of this goddamn house.
Wait,
she says.
What?
He bites out.
Your keys.
They're sitting where he left them on the kitchen counter. He stalks over, grabs them, and does what he should have done the second he heard her voice. He flees. It's a bad idea to drive when you're drunk. Everyone knows that. It's probably also a bad idea to drive when your hands aren't steady enough to fit the key into the ignition. Grantaire takes a deep breath. He squeezes the steering wheel. In the rearview mirror, his eyes are red, but not as bad as they could be. He hates feeling this stupid, for getting all worked up, for raising his voice, for fucking up his own exit like that, for turning down her help with his damn tie. He had the option of not rolling up all sloppy and unprepared and asking favors when he's already late. He breathes out and in again. It's a necktie. It's not a national tragedy. Musicata went to Catholic school at some point, he's pretty sure. She'll be able to fix it for him. She'll do the knot like it's absolutely nothing, joking about helpless white boys the whole time. And then Jolie will make a pun about tuxes somehow, and Combeferre will have an obscure fact about the history of men's dress clothes, and who even knows what Jeanne will be wearing? This time, he gets the key in on his first try. He backs out of the driveway and away from that house, rolls down the windows, and cranks the volume on the stereo until he can feel the bass in the soles of his feet. The most magical night of our fucking lives.
All right, he mutters. Let the magic begin.